Get Pucked.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Get Pucked podcast. Vito Matt here with you. And that's it. The season ended. The Stanley Cup was awarded to the Vegas Golden Knights a little while ago. And already we're off to the races with the Habs news once again. So the latest, as I'm sure most of you have already seen, Sean Monahan has been signed. And I'm going to dive into my feelings about this in a second. But just for the particulars out there, this is a one-year contract. I think it's $1.985 million with a $15,000 a bonus incentive if he goes over 26 games, which is what he played last season. Apparently, I thought it was more than that, actually. But supposedly it was 26 games. That's all he played. It's pretty wild. Anyway, let's get Vito's take real fast. What do you think? I can't say you don't like it, but what do you think?
Oh, everyone should like this. There's little risk, and there's a possibility for a very high reward here. If he's able to stay healthy, he will produce. He will insulate Nick Suzuki. If they do acquire another center or winger, depending how they want to play Kirby Dach and where they want to play him. But let's just say they slot, you know, they acquire PLD and all that, and he becomes your 3C. That's a very good 3C to have.
Okay, well, hold on a second there, throwing PLD, because you've already jumped and opened the can of worms that was going to be where I'm going with this. I mean,
don't jump into it yet. Let me just
finish
my thought.
Go ahead.
So either way, it's not a bad move. What you saw what he did once he got there with the Montreal Canadiens and how Nick Suzuki was playing. It was nothing wrong with having him there. The issue that there was with Sean Monahan last year, if you put health aside, is the fact that we were getting a player who's getting paid $6 plus million. Now we're getting him for a little under two, potentially at two for sure. 1 year in basically a show me and a prove me deal. It's not only proving it to the Montreal Canadiens fan base or the Montreal Canadiens, but he's trying to prove it to himself too that he can still be one of the good centers in the NHL. So there's nothing wrong with this deal. And on top of it, if he does perform well and Montreal's out of the playoff picture, they can trade him at the deadline. There was a few teams that were interested in his services before they found out he was injured, Colorado being one of them. And they can circle back on trying to acquire Sean Monahan at the trade deadline if that's their need at that point. So how could anybody dislike this?
Some people out there playing the devil's advocate, because I'm in agreement with you on pretty much most of that there, but the devil's advocate out here would say to the effect that he's taking the spot of perhaps maybe one of the kids that were coming up because he's a top six. He's going top six. I'm just saying if you slot him in there and he's your 2C, let's pretend for a second Pierre-Luc Dubois doesn't come to the Canadiens. Okay. Because from the time that we've been talking about PLD from many episodes ago until now, I believe the narrative has shifted considerably. And I'm now in the camp that I don't think he's coming here, at least not next season. So let's say he's not here. Until he's here, we're going to go with he's not here. So now you got Sean Monahan as your 2C, but you also have Kirby Dach there. Now, Kirby Dach gets thrown to the wing.
You don't have to limit Sean Monahan as a 2C. You can also...
Hold on a second.
Because he played on the wing with Suzuki and Koskinen too.
But even if he goes wing, Sean Monahan is a top six. He's a top six.
On the Montreal Canadiens.
Definitely on this team. You can make the argument that if he's healthy, like he's saying that he's healthy, he should be a top six on most teams. Maybe not first line, second line, what have you, top six. So if he's there, again, keeping into the context here, I'm playing devil's advocate. If he's there and he's taking up a top six position, and he's there for just 1 year, and the way the deal is structured, and it looking like, I mean, anything could happen, but the likelihood of the Habs making the playoffs next year, I would imagine the odds are stacked against them. So let's say he puts up a very admirable season. They're going to be out of the playoffs, let's say. I mean, it's the perfect tool to send him off somewhere else to a contender to get some assets back. That's how this should materialize. I like Sean Monahan. Does he have a future on this team? He's young enough that he's on the cusp of maybe you keep him around if he really loves it here and he loves playing for St. Louis and whatever. Maybe the next deal is a three-year deal or whatever. I honestly look at this and say, this is a great stopgap. This is a great stopgap.
It's another shot at the strategy they were hopeful for last year.
And I think this time it plays out. I think if he stays healthy, you know, Hopefully he stays healthy. He puts up the numbers that he was putting up in the same kind of trajectory that he was doing last year. And the same sort of eye test as well, because he was looking good out there. When he was out there, the power play was actually looking good as well. Like, he made everybody around him look better. So
he was starting to gel. He was
He was finding chemistry
with Caulfield and Suzuki.
This is a stopgap. And I think that this is the first of a couple dominoes that are going to fall. And hopefully it plays out. Now, again, I would love for the Canadiens to make the playoffs. I mean, I'm all for it every year. I don't necessarily like for cheering for a team to tank. So the season starts, even if it's another 2 years away, as some people are suggesting the Habs are. I say if they go for the playoffs, try to make the playoffs. Go now. You should always try to do it. Let's say they don't. I think it's perfect as an opportunity to use him and ship him off somewhere to a contender, and then he's UFA again, and you never know what happens the following year. But that would be the perfect, perfect move with this guy. Now, he is here. He is signed, and he is probably a center, and I think Doc will probably stay on a wing. But now that leaves you with some interesting questions. Now, if we go back to Pierre-Luc Dubois, and if the Canadiens go and do acquire him this year, or something, Carlson falls in the draft, or who knows, a million different variables, they get another centerman to come in here. What are you doing with Dvorak?
You'd have to think that Dvorak would be one of the pieces going the other way, even just to make the money work. And at the same time, when you think of Winnipeg, it'd be a center going out, so they'd probably need a center to come back in. Now, I would think that center would be a stopgap even for them to figure out and sort things out for, you know, who's going to really replace Pierre-Luc Dubois. Because they've got also another issue there, right? It's they could hold on to Mark Scheifele for another year, but then they risk losing him for nothing. So they can't be a team that's going to lose Scheifele, lose Dubois, and have no centers playing for them. So if Pierre-Luc Dubois is coming to the Montreal Canadiens, you'd have to think that Christian Dvorak is one of the pieces, probably one of the many pieces, going the other way. So that's what I think would happen with Dvorak, which is why I'm saying that if a centerman does come in, whether it's PLD, whether it's, you know, Kent Hughes pulls a rabbit out of his hat and goes and gets something that nobody was expecting. And Sean Monahan moves to being your 3C with Evans being your 4C. That's quite a bit of depth down the middle. Now, in the NHL, things could happen. An injury could just toss those plans right out the window. But looking at it on paper, as we know, Montreal knows a thing or two about injuries. It would be a great, great look down the middle. But you also have that versatility that if something like that happens and, you know, Monahan happens to go down and they do have PLD and they do have Suzuki and Doc's on the right wing who could go move back to center, that's what happens. Tampa Bay was a championship-winning team with multiple centers on their roster that were shifted to the wings and so on.
It's easier
for a center to move to the wing than it is for a winger to move as a center. So, we saw that with Drouin. You don't want to do that.
Let me ask you this. I want to keep Pierre-Luc Dubois out of the conversation as much as possible for today. What would you think of a down the middle of Suzuki, Doc, Monahan, Evans?
Suzuki, Doc, Monahan, and Evans. Yep. I'm okay with that. I'm actually happy with that. But it also conveys a certain message that we're going to try to compete, but we're not going to be a playoff team.
And is that so bad? I think the fan base is cool for one more year of competitive, but not making it hockey. I think they're okay.
I think the fan base would be, yeah, I think I could agree with that. As long as, you know, some would argue and say, no, if Montreal has to lose, might as well lose and tank and get another top five pick. I would like to start seeing progress going forward because you don't want to have.
No, yes. There's got to be a progress here. I think without question,
you got to have a progress here. Yeah. If you tell me that all of a sudden Montreal Canadiens, you know, they had a competitive year, it wasn't an injury riddled season, and all of a sudden they're picking 14th. Some would argue, well, that's you know, you're trying to be a mediocre team again. No, that to me means that the cupboard is full and the kids are developing and they're progressing to another level and they took their games to another level.
Don't draft 14th 3 years in a row. It's okay that you draft 5, then 14, and then you're in the playoffs and maybe you're in the 20s or something, and then who knows, right? like that progression has to happen. It's nice as a consolation prize to have the high-end pick, but that means that your team was bad. You don't want to have a bad team. And I'm just go back to my down the middle that I gave you there. I think they're going to have to pay too much to get Dubois. And I think if you roll that four, now that still somehow gets rid of Christian Dvorak. I don't know how. And I don't necessarily even super dislike Dvorak. If he was stuck around, it's not the end of the world. So now you have Suzuki, Monahan, Dvorak, Evans, and Doc on your wing. It's not terrible either. I just would prefer Doc to go play center. I'd prefer to have Dvorak sent away somewhere for picks or maybe, I don't know, something, just something. And then you got your centers lined up and you can actually start working on the wingers that you properly have in your organization and start bringing them up.
You'd have to think that if they don't line Dubois, so they don't line that center, then what you're going to likely see is Doc moving as the 2C and Montreal might try to address that top right wing position.
They have to. I think so.
That might be a backup plan, unless they, during the draft, they land something and somebody drops on their lap. Because I mean,
we'll get to that in a second, but yeah,
right. You would think he's, no matter what, Kent Hughes is going to make some kind of move where he'll add something. That's something we don't know. PLD is probably the priority, but with the prices that we're hearing to acquire him and with the teams being involved. Now, again, these are all rumors. Some of the rumors that are put out there, you'd have to think that if those rumors were true, the trade would have already happened. And it didn't. So it might, nobody really knows. But would I like PLD on the Montreal Canadiens? You guys know my feelings on that.
Yeah.
You know my feelings on that.
You're a yes man. I know.
I'm a yes man as long as it doesn't break 9 million.
It's going to come close. I think it's going to come close.
He wants 9. I've told you this before, and this is the last time I'm going to say it. He wants 9.
It's
somewhere between, 8 and 8.5, with maybe being an 8.25, 8.35 being the sweet spot that makes it all happen. But don't go a penny more than that. Anything more than that, it's going to be, that's tight. But if they make it, if they get him and it says, okay, it's 8.5, would I be surprised? No. 9 million, I'd be surprised.
It's got to be asset-wise. It has to make sense. You can't overpay in assets. And then even when you start to think about what he's going to be asking, what you're going to pay, to your point, I think anything over 8.5 is too much. Now, I come back to another thing that was suggested. And I know I didn't want to talk about Dubois, but here we are anyways. His comparable. A lot of people are looking at Mark Stone. Now, I don't necessarily think they're the identical player. But when you look at just numbers from a number perspective, now Mark Stone is a captain. He doesn't have that baggage that comes with PLD, with the teams and whatever. But I don't think Mark Stone has gotten over 65 points in a season. And he's paid big dollars. And a lot of people are looking at that contract to say, well, that should be what Dubois is going to get. Dubois' ceiling might even be higher. He might actually go to a team that he's comfortable with. Let's say he comes to the Habs. And he really starts to flourish like you think he's going to, and he becomes an 80-plus point player. And then suddenly the money all makes sense. But, I mean, if that's going to be the comparable at today's day and age, with the money that they have today available, with the spots that they have to fill, and the fact that they actually do have centermans on this team that maybe aren't beaters, but it's a decent center line. You don't need him right now.
So you would look and you say Mark Stone. But just like somebody could say Mark Stone as a comparable, I could come up with other players as comparables. I could say Rupi Hintz is a comparable. Center, 26 years old, and he's put up 70-plus points. Guess what? Dubois never put up 70-plus points. So I could look, and Rupi Hintz getting paid $8.45 million. All right, so here, let's split it here. And you go 8.25.
It's close.
You're a little under. You're a little younger. We'll give you 8.25, 8.3 to call it a day. So you can find comparables just about everywhere. Mark Stone is also a winger. You might put a bit more value on the center. But if I've got to find comparables out there, you can find a bunch. You could also say, hey, Matthew Barzal, 9.15. He's put up certain numbers. He's a different type of centerman. But you could find different comparables for everything. So you got to find somewhere where it's a middle ground that works for both. How much do you really want to be part of the Montreal Canadiens? How much do you really want to be the guy? Because the moment you get paid the most on the team, you automatically become the guy. Do you want to be the guy in Montreal, or do you want to be a piece of this puzzle?
I mean, by all accounts, he wants to. I mean, a lot of people, oh, it's day in and day out and all the rumor mill about him wanting to be here. Yes, he's open to listening to other places, but he's made it very clear he wants to be in Montreal and everything. I don't know. I think it's still to be determined. I think the draft is going to play a really big factor as to whether or not Kent Hughes pulls the trigger on this. I think the pieces going back have to make a lot of sense. You got to unload a lot of money to make room for him for all the other things that are coming too. They have already a lineup that really is full. And they got guys, I've been saying this for a couple episodes, they got guys in the AHL who are knocking that door. At some point, they're going to need to make a progression. They're going to need to come up. And you can't have all these other guys. Now, you got contracts expiring. If they can't move Mike Hoffman, he's here for one more year and then he is gone. So you got another spot there. You know, Pitlick, obviously, up and down. He'll always fill in if someone gets injured. But I don't see him having a full-time gig on the team.
Just like last year, he might go through waivers and send out.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, so Joel Armia has, I think, another 1 or 2 years. 1 year, 2 years, maybe?
2 years.
Like, 2 years. I mean, it's inevitable these guys are going to go. But Kent Hughes has to find ways in the next couple days and right up until the draft. He has to find ways to unload these guys for ideally draft capital, or you got to package a bunch of them in for that one big piece coming back. I think he has to. And if he doesn't, it might be the first black mark on his resume with the Habs.
I don't think it would be a black mark if he doesn't unload all the contracts.
Not all of them. No. Don't take my words out of context. Not all of them. He has to unload some of them. He has to.
Ideally, it's more he wants to, but Hoffman,
I'd say have to.
Without Hoffman, he can offer to give him away. There has to be somebody willing to say, all right, I'll take Hoffman, but what are you going to give me on top of Hoffman to make it an incentive for me to take him? So that's where Hoffman's at in his career. So yep. You look at it and say, okay, even if they go to Arizona, which seems to be the dump roster of the NHL.
The dumping ground of the NHL, yeah.
Right? Even if you go to Arizona, Arizona's not stupid. They're even saying that they've got too many picks for the upcoming two drafts, and they want to trade off some of these picks to acquire assets that play today.
They have more picks than roster players presently, by the way.
Which
is insane.
So even if you go and say, okay, Mike Hoffman, give me your 7. Give me future considerations. I don't care. They might not do it. And it's not because he wouldn't fit on the roster. There's no spot for him in Arizona. It's just right now, he's negative value. He's really
then you not pay to get rid of him. You have to move these guys. Years.
So it's what are you paying? That's the question. I, you know, as a Montreal Canadiens fan and as you know, as the podcast, would I be willing to sacrifice you know, maybe the Vegas 4th round pick on top of Hoffman just to get the contract off the books? Yeah, but I'd rather do that for Armia. I'd rather get rid of that extra year. Hoffman has one more year of torture.
There's always a tier of things that you would be in sort of a preference to do. And I've got a whole laundry list also. I'm simply saying from broad strokes perspective, there are several dudes still signed on this team that by the end of the draft, some of them have to be moved. And it's not to say, I mean, like, for example, Edmondson. I like Eddie. I really do. I like what he brings. I like him overall as a defenseman. But Eddie's you've got to move him also. He's got to get gone. Hoffman's got to get gone. Armia, hopefully, got to get gone. Oh, okay. These guys are replaceable by dudes you have already.
I think Eddie's gone. But Eddie doesn't have to move now. That's the thing. Eddie could still
Have to move.
No. There's
they
a difference.
Have to move.
If all of a sudden they want to start the season with Joel Edmondson and wait till trade deadline to move him, it's not a bad play. Mike Hoffman or Joel Armia too, I could see where Joel Armia could still contribute to the team defensively, but that's a heavy contract for what he's bringing these days, especially that he's been injured for most of the 2 seasons. So those are two contracts, Hoffman and Armia, that actually, in my opinion, they have to move them. They got to open up that money to move them. Eddie, on the other hand, he brings a lot to the Montreal Canadiens right now. Right now, whether it's leadership, whether it's, you know, filling up a defensive spot, whether it's chemistry. Either way, he's there. He's good for the team. But I also know and would appreciate that he's an asset that could be moved in the offseason. And by all accounts, it sounds like he would be. I mean, even on the fourth period, he's on their trade board. So with that being said, find a way to move Hoffman and Armia. Armia is going to be a little bit more challenging. If Armia doesn't get moved this year, I'll even say he gets bought out next season.
I can see it. I can see it. I just come back to what I was saying, because like you had asked me before the other day, we were just kind of talking and you're like, has Kent Hughes and Gorton to the same extent, have they done anything yet that I would look at and say, oh, that wasn't a good play or that wasn't good or it didn't work out. And we were kind of musing about this and we're like, no, not really. We can't really think of anything that didn't really work out. Slafkovský, where we ended up coming both agreeing to saying like, looks good and we're happy we have him. Book's still out on it. We don't know. So you can't really hold that against Hughes. But the rest of his moves and his signings have all been pretty stellar. So when I look at it and I'm just trying to think of like, well, what could be a disappointing sort of scenario with him? I got to say, by the time the draft is over, like draft floor deals, this now few days leading up to it, if something doesn't move, especially now that, like I said, that first domino, that Sean Monahan signing 1 year, you've now locked in another guy.
There's a bit more of a
grace period. Otherwise, it's a black mark in my book.
There's a bit more of a grace period, and that grace period is, besides if you want to say the offseason, because some people argue they have an entire offseason. For me, it's more by max two days after free agency. Because on free agency, a lot of teams that have cap space blow a lot of money, and it'll be a little harder for to make moves at that point, because you got to find the teams that now have space to work with. We know how free agent frenzy typically works. It becomes a frenzy. All of a sudden, players are getting $5, $6, $7, $8 million. Teams are just shelling out all kinds of cash and cap space. And all of a sudden, it becomes much harder. There's a lot less teams to maneuver with and to work with. So it won't be exactly draft floor, but say by like July 3rd, 4th. Yeah, if you didn't make a move, then it'd be an off season where we as Habs fans are gonna have to look and say, oh, okay, now we just gotta hope that they stay healthy, because a healthier Montreal Canadiens are gonna be more successful than last season, but we got the same roster.
Okay, I'm in agreement. I mean, I think it's even before that, but you know, a couple days apart, whatever it is, a week apart or what have you. I mean, yeah, something's got to give. I do want to switch gears fast, though, to the draft again, because that's the hot button issue right now with, of course, is it going to be Michkov? Is it going to be Smith? Is it Benson? Is it Leonard? All of these questions. The real fun question that I'm having the most is, it's normally who's going to be there by the time the pick comes up, and that's the big debate. I like the big debate that's happening that nobody seems to know. Are they going to stay put? Are they going to trade up? Are they going to trade down? What's happening? So I'm asking you your opinion, complete shot in the dark, because I won't even pretend like you know what's going to happen. Nobody knows what's going to happen. What do you think is going to happen? Where do you see it? Are you conservative? It's going to stay at five. It's all this talk is talk, but they're going to stay five. Do you think they swing for the fences and go for Fantilli at two? Do they move up one spot to ensure Michkov, or do they fall back to like eight?
What do you think? So the cost of moving up is insane. We've heard about this, right?
Yeah.
Recent news or recent suggestions, I would say, that came out from Jeff Marek was that he thinks that Pat Verbeek, general manager of the Anaheim Ducks, would not be scared to go and grab somebody like Matvei Michkov at two. That he wouldn't be scared to do that. Doesn't mean he's going to. Fantilli is still the consensus number two, but talent-wise, a lot of people have suggested that Michkov is the closest thing talent-wise to Connor Bedard. Now, the top five have been a carousel of different players lately. Okay, before it was like it was set in stone. We know Connor Bedard's one. We knew Fantilli was two. Then it was like, okay, three was Carlson. And then four was where the question marks started. You know, some suggested it was going to be Michkov with San Jose. Then, okay, Will Smith. So to answer one of your questions, if by the time the Canadians are picking at five and they see that Will Smith, because I think that's the target player, that's the player that they truly want, okay, if Will Smith is not there at five, Montreal will look to trade down. They will look to trade down not very far, between one and three spots, get an asset, and probably the player that they're looking for. But if Will Smith is not there, if Will Smith is there, then they're going to draft Will Smith, and that's also going to play into what are they going to do with the whole Pierre Luc Dubois, and are they willing to pay more? If they get Will Smith, in my opinion, you could say bye to the Pierre Luc Dubois trade. You could say bye to it. They're not going to trade. They'll maybe wait a year. If he's available, they'll talk again. If he's not, and he decided to sign 8 years elsewhere, so be it. It wasn't meant to be. Okay? But if they have to make that pick and that decision about Michkov, they're going to move on from it. Now, if they do manage to acquire Pierre-Luc Dubois and Will Smith is not available because he got picked, they're probably, and people won't like this, they might make a move for Reinbacher and say, okay, we probably gave up. They probably gave up defensive assets to go and acquire PLD, some young defensemen, because that's our strength. That's Montreal Canadiens' strength is on the LD. So they might as well use that to their advantage to acquire Pierre-Luc Dubois. So what are they going to do? Okay, go get Reinbacher and add more depth on the right side. And scouts have said that Reinbacher is actually a little closer to the NHL than most people think.
I mean, I don't know, man.
People will be pissed. There's a portion of this fan base that would be furious about this, because there's people who don't want Pierre-Luc Dubois, and those same people seem to not want Reinbacher either. They want Matvei Michkov. There's nobody else in their mind. You could tell them, Will Smith, you could tell some of these people, that Montreal is going to, they're going to get Fantilli, and they're going to be like, nah, Matvei Michkov. Why wouldn't you want the second most talented player?
I mean, you know what? I want Michkov. I would, if he's there at five, I would choose Michkov. I would. Ask me if I would choose Michkov if Will Smith is also there. And let's say Reinbacher went four, and now you got Will Smith and Michkov there. Yeah, you put me in a really tight spot. From what we hear, we know that the organization is very high on Will Smith. He would likely be the safer choice. He might ultimately end up being an all-star, so it really doesn't matter in the long run. But I think fundamentally, when you break it down, like a lot of people have suggested, and I tend to be in agreement with this, you can't know the future. You understand that the political landscape of today's world is a little bit muddled, to say the least. But that being said, he's apparently going to show up at the draft. He was able to freely leave Russia. He says he wants to come to the NHL. It's been a dream. All the other things lining up. He's there, he is, I believe, consensus, the second most skilled player of the draft. You have to take that.
You're also hearing now, okay, he wants to come to the NHL, this and that, but there's certain teams that he wants to try to see if he can finagle his way to. That's the team that targets him. That's the team that drafts him. So I don't want to risk drafting a player that when he comes over in 3 years from now is going to give me a hard time and not want to sign.
I know it's been a while that the Habs had this whole, like, door was very open to Russians, and then suddenly that door closed very quickly, and then all the Russians sort of, like, left the team, and then it became, like, a Finnish team, from Finland. Yeah, I know that
you had it to Slovakia now.
Now Slovakia, I mean, there's ebbs and flows. I think I could be wrong. I'm not an NHL player, clearly, but I would imagine if the Montreal Canadiens say they want you, you don't thumb your nose at the Habs. You go play for the Canadiens. You might want to go play with Alex Ovechkin if you're a kid from Russia. I understand that narrative. I get it. And they're at eight, and I understand. And maybe he'd be very happy. They take him under his wing. It'd be a beautiful little, buddy-buddy thing. I get it. But if you're telling me that the Habs take him at five, and you're suggesting there's a chance that he's like, yeah, you know what? I really don't want to come and play for the Montreal Canadiens.
Listen,
I don't see that. Again, I don't see that happening.
Do I think he wants to come to the NHL? Yes. Do I think that in 3 years from now he'll come to the NHL? I have no idea. Do I think that there might be some things that might block him and prevent him from coming to the NHL in 3 years? Yes. There's another thing that a lot of people don't mention, okay, is that they draft somebody like Will Smith. Okay, he's committed to Boston College for next year. the year, assuming that year, the second year he comes up, comes and play with Montreal. That's assuming Montreal also draft him. He's already getting used to the North American hockey because he's already in North America, but I mean, he's getting used to the pro level of hockey, the NHL. He'll be able to play, be under Martin St. Louis' tutelage a little sooner, be under Adam Nicholas, all of that stuff. Matvei Michkov, some suggest that after 3 years, will be a bit more of a finished product, will have bulked up a little bit, but he still has to come and get used to North American hockey. Now, a guy of his talent and skill level shouldn't take too long.
Look at Kaprizov.
Right. Look, Kaprizov also came at the age of 26, not 21.
Fine. Or
22. Okay. So now, assuming he comes after 3 years and it takes him another 2 years to really get used to things and really find his groove and whatever, it took 5 years when you had a guy, Will Smith, who may potentially put up similar numbers, maybe 10, 15 points less, 10, 15 points more. We don't know. For a guy who gets to start when Montreal is getting competitive.
Or maybe 30 points less. And maybe Michkov comes and he's a 130-point player. But
you never know how it's going to translate. My point is that there is risk. And in the top five, typically teams might want to take the safer, talented choice.
I think it comes down to context and it comes out to where the organization is now. And they're in a very unique spot for this particular market that always demands success. They're going to show, they've been showing already, that development is a big aspect to how they want to run the team and the organization now, and that things are going to progress slowly. And that people are going to make the jump when they're ready. And so when you bring that kind of mentality in, this sort of slow roll, and you say, we have the opportunity to take a guy who... There were some people out there. Again, I can't claim to know that much about Michkov. I'll be fair and I'll be honest. I only know with what the insiders and the people in the industry talk about. There are literally people, not Joe Blow, who's just on Twitter, like actual hockey guys that have said that if you compare him to Bedard, they are very close. Very close. I mean, and Bedard has been touted as generational, like next level, like generational, McDavid-esque. When you got somebody who's right there.
I don't think you'd call him McDavid-esque, but let's, even if people
even
say
if
that.
Even if he's a McDavid 1B, that's still better than 97% of the rest of the league.
Listen,
if you got Michkov, who's a 1C of a McDavid-esque talent, how do you not roll the dice on that?
The way I see it is, okay, he's coming. He's going to be supposedly in North America soon for the draft. Apparently, he's going to attend, right? If he's not already in North America. So he's going to be doing a few interviews. If after some of those interviews, the Montreal Canadiens are talking at five and they draft Matvei Michkov, then something happened in those conversations that convinced them to say there's no risk, or the risk is very minimal, or we can take care of it. Or somebody came out in the background that we don't know behind the scenes that made Kent Hughes, Bob Rov, and everybody else that's part of the draft department to feel comfortable to say, let's take Matvei Michkov. Because it's not about his skill. It's not about his talent level. The only reason why he's even dropping down to five or to the Montreal Canadiens, or there's rumors that he could be from five to eight, is because of all the risk that surrounds him. It's not about the actual player. It's not about the talent level or the skill of him, because if they knew right away that he would, it's also that 3-year contract, by the way, but if they knew that he was going to come 100% guaranteed, we wouldn't be talking about Matvei Michkov at five. We'd be talking about, is there a chance that Adam Fantilli could drop to five? Is there a chance that Leo Carlson drops to five? Or it's a guarantee they're getting Will Smith at five because that's how everything drops down.
Well, let me throw this in you. Or at you, not in you. I don't want to hurt you. At you. Let me say this. I think the Montreal Canadiens today, as we talk, whatever it is, the 21st, they know who they want. This conversation that they have with him, if it is him and they don't take Michkov, then there was nothing that really moved the dial one way or another. But it's my belief that at this point, at this close to the draft, they know who they want.
Well, they know who they want. And we can all speculate, other than hearing it from Kent Hughes' mouth himself, we know that who they want is at five at least. Not if they don't move, you know, if they move up, it's a different story. But at five, they want Will Smith. And if Will Smith is not there, it's going to change their plans.
I don't know. I can't swear to you that it's Will Smith. We know that they're high on it. But just
did
as many
reports out Kent there Hughes' face lit up when they spoke about Will Smith?
Yes.
He looked like a guy who just saw his child.
He coached him. It's like one of his boys. You can't say that's because they're so gung-ho to draft them. Maybe they are. But you've got people out there that are suggesting it's Leonard, too, they're real high on. People with a lot of credibility. And that's a name that we weren't even really talking about. I mean, we don't know. Well, to an extent, but he's not one of the main guys. There's always, he's doing the right thing from a management perspective. You kick the tires and you say, hey, Anaheim, what would it take? We're not gonna really make this happen, but what would it take? We're curious.
You heard the names, and they're non-starters. Caulfield,
five, and something. Now, some people might say Caulfield and five. Caulfield and five for Fantilli.
I don't do that.
Okay, no. Some people do. Maybe the Habs say no.
Those people that want that just want to see chaos. They want to see and PlayStation.
It would be pretty chaotic. It would be, especially since they just signed him. Yes.
It's never going to happen.
Fine. Never. So with that, fine. With that in mind, then, if that's the case and they've done their due diligence and they've asked everybody who's anybody about trading whatever, at five, right now, at the Montreal head office, at HQ, they have a list of priorities of who should be available at five and in what order they want to take them.
Let me throw you one. Let me throw you one. Let's say Montreal does trade two or even three, but it takes the five, Lane Hudson, and the Florida pick for Fantilli. Let's say it's for two for Fantilli. So it's basically two firsts in this draft and Lane Hudson, who by all accounts should have never been drafted in the second round.
I don't know.
But you see,
I'm not hanging up the phone. I'm not hanging up the phone. Ooh. I'm not hanging up the phone.
Ooh.
I'm not saying it's an unequivocal yes. It's not a snap yes, but I'm definitely not hanging up the phone. That is a plausible trade. It's plausible. Yeah.
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 Yeah. I don't think I could do it.
This isn't just Fantilli, right? Because he's you gotta almost feel bad for the kid. Almost any other draft year in the past several years, he's the number one over every other number one.
Yeah,
he's the number one.
It's probably 2019, I would say.
I mean, that's a big talent. Big talent. Lane Hudson has all the promise in the world. We see him. We know his size thing. We know everything about it, but he hasn't done it yet. You have some really good raw materials, and then your other two picks are nothing but picks. You don't know. You can say you don't know Fantilli either, but when you have a clear cut guy who should be first overall in several drafts, you do that deal. I would say I would do it.
Five or two, and Lane Hudson and the first are the kicker.
Yeah. You know what? I'm again, I'd have to digest just a little bit and hope they don't put me to the gun and say, you have to tell me right now. But I'm inclined to say, yeah, I might actually do that. Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot. It's a big one. I'm leaning towards, yes, I would probably do that deal.
So everybody who's going to be listening to this episode and everybody who's tuning in and whatnot, would you make that trade? Is Matt crazy to say yes, that he would do it? I'm on the side of the fence that I probably wouldn't do it.
But not 100% no. Don't tell me
100% no. I'm bringing it up because I think that's something that Anaheim would probably, if they haven't already, would say, oh, you want number two? This is what it's going
to
cost you.
You know what? My honest answer, I think that's not enough to get to.
Might not be.
Actually not enough.
But I'll be very honest. If that's not enough to get to,
and then you don't do it, then you don't do it. No. For sure. But under that, if that's the deal, if you're the Ducks and you call me and that's what you're asking for, I'm putting you on hold. Thanks very much. 1 second on hold. And I sit back and I go, this actually might be something that we're going to do. It's possible. It's very, very possible that you do that deal. Yeah. So yeah, recap the deal one more time for everybody. We'd love to hear you in the comments what you think. If Anaheim calls Montreal and says, we want the 5th overall pick, the 31st overall pick, and Lane Hudson, we will give you the number 2 pick. Do you make that deal? That's the deal. Do you side with me and likely yes, or do you side with Vito, likely no? We're both not 1,000%, but that's where we're leaning. Let us know. We'll end on that. So thanks very much for tuning in. Again, we're hopeful that we're going to get a couple more of these out before the draft actually comes up. And we might even have a couple of people that might be popping in pre and post draft to kind of spice things up a bit. So more to come on that when we can lock and secure the names down. We'll let you know on Twitter. And if you haven't already, please consider liking and subscribing if you liked what you heard. And it's always very nice to see comments. If you guys have anything you want to say, please drop a comment, either Twitter, drop us at, you know, Get Puck Podcast on Twitter. We'll reply to you there or on our YouTube videos. That would be great. And on that note, for Vito, I'm Matt, and this was
Get Pucked.